No one changes until they become sick and tired of staying the same. We just get comfortable and we do it and we do more of it, and it gets ahead of us and away from us, and we keep doing it. It's like, oh wait, there has to be a shake up, a wake up, a crisis. Wait, what am I doing? I spent all my money, or I drank too much alcohol. What am I doing? I gotta have some pain here to wake me up.
Good day, friends. Jonathan Darty here with another episode of the PSR Podcast, which is a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries. In today's episode, Stephen Cervantes and I are going to roll up our sleeves to explore the journey of recovery from unwanted sexual behaviors. And we're going to discuss the deeper transformation that's needed beyond just sobriety. We're going to share over a dozen practical maxims and spiritual insights that will help you aim for life beyond recovery. We are going to reflect on aging, grief, and the challenges of change, emphasizing honesty, community, and trusting God. Through some of our own personal stories and hopefully some recovery wisdom that we've picked up over the last decades, we encourage you to take small, consistent steps, embrace vulnerability, and please remember that lasting change is a process, one day and one choice at a time. For daily insights from Stephen, visit drmarriage.org. For additional resources from us, you can visit bebroken.org or click on the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And friends, of course, I'm always going to invite you to rate and review the podcast after listening to help others find it. Now let's get into today's hopeful and practical conversation about life beyond recovery. All right, Stephen Cervantes, Dr. Marriage, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, so now we're recording this before this 2026 year, but how do you feel about us getting into years like 2026? I mean, does it feel like Star Trek dates to you that we're like, you know?
2026, I hadn't thought about that. You're hitting me cold here. I don't know. It's another year. And
I feel like things
are ahead.
I feel like my dad was really hitting on something when he said, you know, once you're over the hill, you pick up speed. You know, it just feels like time goes faster. And, I look up and people are looking at me like I'm old. And I'm like, what happened? When did that start happening?
When did you become the old guy, right?
Exactly, yeah. So I'm excited about the topic today because you know, we help men all the time, right? That are coming out of unwanted sexual behaviors and saying, "Hey, I want to learn how to live a new way." And we try to help them recognize that it's not merely about sobriety. Like that's a huge part, but in some ways, that's kind of like the baseline. Like, let's get you off of your old behaviors. But really, it's about transformation, right? It's about change. Yes. And so many times, guys are saying, "Man, I want as many tools as possible. I want things to help me do that." And I really feel like today is going to be a super kind of practical way to help guys think about change. Like, hey, we're going to give you these maxims, these statements that can really help you think through, like, that's what I want to be about. And so what I encourage guys to do is as we go through these, and we'll post this as part of the show notes, the actual little blog post that you had done, is I would encourage guys to, whichever one resonates the most with you today, man, pull it out, like post it somewhere, put it on your computer screen, or put it on your, you know, bathroom mirror or something, so that it's like, yeah, this, I want to really lean into this so that I can pursue a life of change.
I like your talk. Change, growth, new year, new life, new walk, freedom in Christ. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the mission. And we have to use language.
Yeah.
Right? It's part of how we go forward. It's better language, new thoughts. So am I going down the
go
list?
Go ahead. Yeah, let's do it.
So, you know, AA has all these great sayings in the addiction, the alcohol addiction community. They just have, you know, the program works if you work it. Right, you know, just all kinds of things. So I thought I'm going to just... Yeah, I'm just going to go down and collect as many as I can, because I'd hear guys say these things,
right.
You know. So, you know, I don't know if I have this on the list, but one day at a time, right? That's one of them. And then a guy will say, 1 hour at a time. Right. The next, 1 minute at a time. I mean, they're trying to encourage each other with language. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to capture a big principle. Maybe you can't do the whole day, but maybe you could do an hour. Maybe you can do a minute. Grab something, some sanity, and hold on to it. And as you move forward, and use your language and encourage one another with sayings and thoughts. And well, that sounds biblical, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It's about forming the right kinds of targets to aim at, right?
So that's good. So grow through whatever you're going through. Grow through whatever you're going through. Because you were just telling me people are looking at your grayness and calling you older.
I was like, what happened? Yeah, I told Stephen, I said, I'm looking up now and people are looking at me and talking at me like I'm old. And then, of course, I have to look at myself in the mirror and go, oh, that is an old face. That's an old guy there, you know. So,
but that's what he's going through. And what am I going through? Actually, I'm going through the loss of my mother. She just passed a couple of days ago. So I watched her for a whole year decline. And so she's not suffering. But now we have to reorient as a family, my brothers and sister and children. And I never wanted my mother and father to die because I would not be old. Because they would be old.
Yeah.
But now that they're gone, I'm old.
Yeah.
But you have to understand, they categorize old. There's young old and old old. Okay? Old old. Young old, old old. I'm young old. Okay,
let's just get it straight.
Okay, so grow through whatever you're going through. And then here's the next one. Nothing changes if nothing changes.
Yeah, I love this one.
How come?
I love this one because it shows that there has to be a foundational shift that needs to take place. Meaning there's a lot of guys that will kind of pretty up their recovery. Like, hey, I'll do these things. But fundamentally what I'm doing is I'm not actually changing the way I live. Yeah. I'm just saying, oh, my wife wants me to go to a group. I'll do that. Or it's like appeasement. And so there's a sense in which I'll do things for a short period of time, kind of like the difference between a diet and actually changing your relationship to food.
You know, it's like
I see a lot of guys that will do these things thinking that if I can just do these short term, then it's like a magic pill and then everything, you know, I'll lose my 10 pounds and I'll be fine. And it's like, well, I haven't actually changed my relationship with how I engage all these things. And that's what I get from this. If nothing changes, like at that level, nothing will change.
And I had a friend that learned the word empathy, and it was like, empathy, empathy would be empathy. It's empathy, you know, men need empathy, and, you know, we have to be empathetic. I'm going to be empathetic. It was all logical.
Yeah.
It was not emotionally. He had not changed to feeling the pain and sadness of a friend. Mm-hmm. Oh, but I learned a new word, and so don't I sound good? Haven't I changed? I have a new word.
Yeah.
No, you're saying if the foundation doesn't change, it's not real change, right?
Right.
You know, you're only as sick as your secrets. Mm. To the guy that wrote a book on secrets, I can't wait to hear what he has to say. But your secrets make you sick. They consume part of you emotionally. You have to split off from part of yourself. You have to live divided. Mm-hmm. And some of your energy is always guarding, protecting, watching. Your secrets you think are safe, but they're part of your sickness.
Yeah. And so I love 1 John 1, where we're told that God is light and in him there is no darkness or deceit at all. Like there's no deceptiveness in God.
Right.
And so he tells us to walk in the light as God is in the light, meaning like we're not to have any deceit or secrets. And so I've always thought about that. It's like the degree to which I want to be whole, to which I want to experience the fullness of peace, rest, and joy that God made me for,
amen,
is the degree to which I'm not going to carry any secrets. Because secrets really are about, I think they're about control. They're about fear.
Yeah.
They're about how can I manipulate the circumstances around me rather than, hey, I want to live an honest, truthful life. And so I do, I totally agree with this, the idea that you're only as sick as your secrets. And so the degree to which I'm willing to say, I don't need to have control. I'm not the one that can determine the outcomes. I need to be present. So therefore, I've got to bring myself into the light.
And the secrets live in the darkness.
Totally.
They have to come to the light if I'm going to be free.
Yeah, right? If I'm going to be well, according to this idea of sickness or wellness, you know.
So I love this one. If you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you always got.
I love it.
That is a great one. If you always do what you've always done, if you always think the way you've always thought, if you always act the way you've always acted, you know, if you just, if nothing changes, you know.
This is a great systems statement. And another way that you could describe this is saying that your system is currently perfectly designed for the outcomes that you're getting. So in other words, if you're an addict that's completely compulsively, you know, looking at porn or having affairs or doing it, it's like, hey, guess what? The system that you're running is perfectly designed for those outcomes that you're getting.
I got you.
So what has to change? The system.
Yes. Right.
Like you gotta operate on a new system if you want to get a different result. You can't just say, oh, I'm not going to fundamentally change anything about the system that I've got, but expect a different result. We call that insanity, right?
Right.
To keep doing the same thing, but expect a different result.
There's another one. Say that one.
If you keep doing what you're doing, but expect a different result, that's insanity. You know, that's not going to actually happen.
No, that I like that one because I think that encumbers so much, mm-hmm. encompasses so much of thoughts, behavior, actions, you know, deeds, small steps, that whole thing. Mm-hmm. So this is yours, right? You always, we strive for progress, not for perfection. We strive for progress, to make progress, to do the next thing, the right thing, the small thing, to practice small so we can live big and better later. But progress, you fall down, you get up. What's your other one? Always keep stumbling forward.
Yes, we stumble in the right direction, you know. So the thing I like about this is, and where I've kind of maybe even grown in this, is the reason that we strive for progress, not perfection, is because God has already promised us perfection.
Hmm.
So our progress is, we are still working towards something that has already been promised to us.
Hmm.
But our life here, God wants us to experience a fuller richness of that promise as we get closer to it. So in other words, mm-hmm. this is why we cannot have that mentality of saying, oh, listen, God's forgiven me. You know, I'm covered by grace, so I can live however I want. No, are you kidding? You've been promised perfection, and you need to be on a journey that is working toward that, not because you're earning anything, but because it's been given to you as a gift.
Mm.
So that's a different way to think about it too, is like, the reason that we strive for progress is because of this great promise. God has said, Stephen, you know what? I've already put the robe of righteousness on you.
Mm.
I want you to get more comfortable in it. I want you to see how it fits and how you're meant to actually walk in that.
That's good.
It's already been given to you, so keep working out what you've already been given.
That's good. So I mentioned this earlier. The program works if you work the program.
Mm-hmm.
Alcoholics will say that. Come to a meeting. Come to 90 meetings in 90 days. Don't open your mouth. You don't have anything interesting to say. This is what the older alcoholics say. Don't open your mouth. Whatever you say is light and fluffy and simple and stupid. So don't open your mouth. Come to 90 meetings. Listen. Be quiet. This program works if you stay with it and work it, because they talk about stress and anger and grief. They talk about emotional. They talk about denial and lying. I pretend. Stay here and keep learning and keep learning. Let this program change you.
Yeah, and we talk all the time, right, about that there's all these layers, and that ultimately the deepest work that you've got to do is on that emotional level. And so mm-hmm. so many times, when we say that, I think some guys automatically think, okay, well, let me go get the emotional work done and then it'll all... It's like, no, you got to start where you're at. And where you're at is you're bleeding out. You need triage. Let's stop the bleeding.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is behavioral type things.
Yes.
And I remember many times my mother would say this to me. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in this. She would say, Jonathan, so much of life is you've got to learn to do what is right before it feels right.
Mm.
So there is a sense in which, you know, we talk often about what we want to be able to live from this place of joy, and we want to be able to live from this place of I am forgiven and I understand this at a deep emotional, spiritual level. And sometimes what that can cause us to believe is that there's no duty or obligation or obedience in our Christian walk. And it's like, no, flee sexual immorality. Like, there's a sense in which it says, oh, don't even let there be a hint of sexual immorality in your life.
Right.
So there are boundaries that we have that sometimes the idea of the program works. If you work the program, we're called to obedience. Now, we're going to do a lot of deeper work. But Stephen, Jonathan, obey. Like, you got to do the right. Like, when you're faced with that temptation today, guess what? Resist. Flee. You know, does that make sense in terms of like, that's
but
part
I'm
of working
still,
the program.
I love what your mother said, say it again.
Sometimes you have to just do what is right before it actually feels right.
That's right. Just do the right thing. And you may be uncomfortable. Do the right thing. But after a while, the whole system follows.
And I think what she was saying, and we talk about this in the workshop, is that when you're made for a life of integrity, a life of holiness, but you have been living in a life of lust, a life of holiness will not feel familiar. That's another way to put it.
Right.
So sometimes you just have to do the right thing before over time it feels like it's the familiar thing.
That's so much common sense.
Right.
It's wise, it's deep, but it's just like common sense. So I like this one because I always wonder, well, why didn't you just change, you know? Mm-hmm. Why don't you just do the right thing, you know? Why didn't you just get there? And this saying is, no one changes until they become sick and tired of staying the same. Mm. We just get comfortable, and we do it, and we do more of it, and it gets ahead of us and away from us, and we keep doing it. It's like, oh, wait, there has to be a shake-up, a wake-up, a crisis. Wait, what am I doing? I spent all my money, or I drank too much alcohol. What am I doing? I gotta have some pain here to wake me up, because we like slumber through life.
Oh yeah. Another way that I've heard this is that no one enters recovery until the pain of addiction is more than the pain of recovery. Because there is pain in recovery, right?
Right.
But there's a point at which you go, man, if I put these on a scale, the pain of my addiction is way heavier than the pain of recovery. So I need to enter that painful journey because it's a good one. It's the right one to go.
Well, and I like what you say about recovery. It's chaos because it's unknown. Mm-hmm. You got to do this. It just seems like, man, I'm in this chaos. I don't know where to camp, to settle, to rest. No, you're not going to find a good place for a while. That's why they say go to 90 meetings a night. That's the alcoholics say. No, you don't know. You don't have a new normal yet. Go to meetings. Go to me. Read books. Meet and accountability. Work the program until you get to the other side of this chaos. So the next one is let go and let God. I'm trying to do it. I've got to do it. We've got to do it. Come on, let's do it. And it's like, what? Stop, stop. Right? Just let go. Pray for wisdom. Let God intervene. Slow down. Don't grab it so tight and force it.
The only way that I would actually change this phrase, because I've never liked this phrase.
Okay.
And because there's one word that I would change.
Okay.
I'd say let go and trust God. And the reason I think that's different is because sometimes the idea of let go and let God is like, okay, I'm just this immobile. I'm just a puppet here.
Yeah.
The idea of let God, meaning like, okay, you do it, God. It's like, no, I need to trust God, and then He's gonna show me, take that step, go there. And I still have to, you know, the program works if you work the program. I still have things to do.
Right.
The idea is I'm not trying to control outcomes. Mm. That's, I think, what an addict is doing, is saying, I want to ultimately control other people. I want to control my life. And the idea of letting go and saying, I need to trust God, because the more I try to tighten my grip of control in my life, it goes out of control.
Mm. So it's interesting because the whole idea that I have to do something, I have to trust God, right? I have to act too. I have a part in this also. It's not like I'm a nothing, but
But think
Turn
of it this
over.
Way. Jesus said, follow me, right?
Yeah.
So guess what? If he's moving, I need to be following, right? So
yeah.
I'm not just to sit around and go, God, I'm letting you. It's like Jesus saying, get up. We got a mission to go on. Let's go over here. I need to take you over here.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's, I need to take you back. You got them things in your past that you need to look at. You need to follow me and go to those wounds that have been unhealed, and we got to work on it. So the idea of trusting God is not inactivity. You know, it's not just being a bump on a log, you know, but it is saying, I have to recognize I am not the one who is ultimately in control of my life.
Mm.
If I want to experience the fullness of peace, rest, joy, all this good stuff, I've got to fully trust God. I can't,
yes.
I can't be the one that's saying I'm controlling my life.
Got it. So the alcoholics say, watch out for these times. And remember the word halt, right? Because when you get hungry, when you get angry, when you get lonely, and when you get tired, right? Hungry people are irritated people. And when you're irritable, be careful. And when you're angry and hurting, you don't make wise choices. You're too impulsive. And too much loneliness by yourself, too detached. Man, you want some distraction.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're too tired, you know, our willpower is strong in the morning. By the end of the day, our willpower is shot. So watch out for the tired times, because that's when weakness and breakdown and evil and just a little bit slips in.
The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak, right?
Yeah. Any comments on that one?
Well, and we've actually even added a few more of those kind of trigger words, like also bored, scared, stressed, or sad. So just looking for some of those, what we might call those either negative or uncomfortable emotions are things to be on the lookout for, because many times those become the setup for being vulnerable to temptation.
Yes.
If you're bored, it's like if you're inactive, that can be a setup for being triggered towards temptation. Or let's say we've talked about sadness a lot, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes we don't want to sit in our sadness. We go there and it's like, oh, I can't stay here, so I need to go find some relief. And that can be a trigger for temptation.
Well, and I'm thinking of bored versus restful.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here and I'm bored. Well, I'm agitated. Or I'm sitting here and I'm restful. Right? One is more dangerous than the other, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So take it one day at a time. This is recovery, okay? We have 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. And man, don't we know, they come in, I've seen men come in, and they want to preach the gospel, and they come two or three times, and we never see them again.
Yeah.
They have all the answers. One guy says, well, I got this drug. Well, I'll tell you what to do. They got all the answers, but their life is out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And so this whole idea of just shifting, learning, growing, slowing one day at a time, until we get to this new normal that we're heading for.
That's good, yeah. And you mentioned before, sometimes 1 hour at a time, one minute at a time.
I love that.
Let's just
one,
try to hit the next marker, you know. I love this next one, so I can't wait for
you
to share.
You read it.
You can't think your way into right living. You have to live your way into right thinking.
Ooh.
I love this because so many times, I mean, I'll even say as a little sidebar to this, this is why I think many Christians fail to grow in their faith, because they just keep getting more and more head knowledge, Bible study after Bible study after Bible study, and they're thinking, they got all these thoughts in their head, and guess what? Their lives are a mess.
Oh, yes.
No. You got to flip that around. This is why it says the righteous shall live by what? Faith. There's an element that says you have to live your way into right thinking. This is why, you know, Jesus says, if you love me, what? He said, keep my commandments.
Mm.
So we can just keep getting all this head knowledge. I know the Greek. I know the Hebrew. And you got all this right thinking.
Right. Oh, my
But you've goodness. Never stepped out and said, oh, you know what? I don't even know my neighbor. I've never loved them. You know, so there's a sense in which you live your way, which is why things like group is so important to the recovery process, right? Because you need to go, like you said, the AA community says 90 meetings in 90 days. You need to put yourself in an environment where right living is happening.
Yes.
So that then you can get your thinking right. And I just love that reordering of that.
Well, and when you were talking, I'm reminded of the pastors who know the history of the church. They've studied grace and mercy and forgiveness and the Greek and exegesis this and exposit that. And I mean, they can, and then they fall.
Yeah, they've been having an affair, whatever, you know, yeah.
Well, what happened? Well, it's what you were talking about. They got all the head stuff. Mm-hmm. But that other, the soul was still, it wasn't going in. It wasn't being transformed.
Yeah, that's where you see a lot of these being woven together. Because again, go back to that one that says the program works if you work the program. Yeah. There's a sense in which there's action that I've got to be taking. There are things that I've got to be doing. Even if, you know what? I don't even know what it all means. I remember when I was first starting my recovery, and folks that were much wiser and further down the road than I was said, Jonathan, you need to be journaling. I thought, what? I don't keep a diary. My mom keeps a diary. What are you talking about? And I was a little resistant to it, but then it was one of those things like, you know what? I need to let those who are wiser and cleaner and living righteous lives tell me what to do. And so I just started doing that. And it was like, oh, I saw the value and the benefit later. Sometimes you just have to do.
Oh, that's good.
You know, again, you got to do the right living part. And then your thinking comes around. It's like, oh yeah, that makes sense that I would do this because it slows me down. You can speak and think way faster than you can write.
Yeah.
So it slows me down. It gets me focused on what I need to be thinking about. And so.
That's good. All right, you read the last two.
God never closes one door without opening another, but it can be hell in the hallway. That's good.
He never closes one door without opening another, but you may be stuck in the hallway in the middle of that, and it may be hell in the hallway. Because it's not, it's such a clean saying, well, he closed the door, but he opens a window. You're like, oh. Okay, we'll just go out the window. Okay. It's clean. It's neat. It's quick. God is just God. He never leaves you in the fuzzy space in between. You know, God. No, sometimes you got to stay in that middle hallway, fuzzy area because that's where the lesson is going to be taught.
And sometimes, you think about the Israelites. That hallway was 40 years long, right? So, but. The good news about that is God is with you in the hallway.
Amen.
So we talk about, you think about Psalm 23, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me.
Yes.
So even when we're in dark times or even when we're stuck in the hallway waiting for that other door to open, it's not as if we're out in the hallway alone. And it's also not as if we're out in the hallway and we don't have anything to do. Like, hey, keep going to group. Right. Keep seeing your counselor. There's things that you can keep doing, even if you don't see clearly what's the next door that's supposed to be opening.
That's beautiful.
And then the last one here is we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And we know who that power is.
Amen.
And I like actually the phrasing of this. We came to believe. Again, I don't think we start recovery. We certainly don't start life with that belief. We start life in brokenness. We start life in sin. I think we start our recovery in brokenness. We start our recovery in a lot of ignorance. And the idea is, by God's grace, he can put us into those situations, those circumstances, into that group where we come to believe, you know what? There is a God who loves me.
Yes.
There is a God who's made a way. There is a God who forgives me. There is one who can restore sanity. I like to think of that as the idea that the one who can restore truth in my life. Because I've been living in lies. I've been living in secrets. I've been living in that deceit, right, that darkness. And there is one, Christ, who can bring me and restore a sense of truth and sanity in my life. So I love that statement. And the fact that statement is even couched in community. We came to believe really, if you're going to learn anything about what we're talking about, change here, and especially recovery, it never happens in isolation.
Mm.
I mean, all of these maxims, if you look at it, they're all meant to be done in community. Grow through whatever you're going through. You need to do that with others, not by yourself. Nothing changes if nothing changes. We'll get into a group of men where you're able to really, I'm not going to go through all of them, but you can see that these were meant to be couched in community.
And I like something greater than myself or ourselves. Like I can't figure out if I'm on earth and I'm a human being and I see everything in terms of earth only, I can't craft a great plan, me. I need a visionary with a big plan and a purpose and a mission. And in our church, we call it the upper story and the lower story, you know? And it's like the lower story has a lot of us in it, but I desperately need a bigger story.
Yeah.
And then the whole idea of restore me, I kind of messed me up on the way. Can I get restored?
And if you think about it, that is the entire God project. We broke the connection with our sin. God's whole plan from before the foundation of the world was a restoration project. He is bringing heaven and earth back together. He is bringing, through Christ, he already brought that connection for us back to him. And so that's the idea of like, if you think about it, even, we use the word recovery, right?
Right.
What does that mean? There's something that needs to be recovered, restored. And so that's what's happening. We're being brought back to what we were meant to be. We were meant to be image bearers of God that reflect holiness, joy, peace, all of that. So that's we good. Hope that this is also going to help you kind of kick off your new year. And I encourage you, take one of these maxims and, again, make it something that you're really going to focus on, maybe just for the next week or month, and go through all of them. Maybe you start to realize this particular one I really need to focus on because I've not lived into that. Yes. And do it all in community. We want to help you take your next best step, so please reach out to us, and we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program.
God bless.
Attention, men. Are you wanting to break free from porn or other unwanted sexual behaviors, but finding it seemingly impossible to quit? If so, we can help. My name is Jonathan Darty, the founder of Gateway to Freedom. This 3-day workshop is for any man who wants to overcome any kind of unwanted sexual behavior. So whether you're married, single, or divorced, this powerful and proven intensive weekend will help you uncover what is at the root of your struggle and discover the man God always created you to be. Space is limited, so call us today at 210-822-8201 to register. That's 210-822-8201, or visit bebroken.org/GTF.